Wait, what did that sound like when you used to do this, like, oh, the BTS thing?
It's time for the BTS
meal. BTS meal. Okay, there we go.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Happy Project Podcast. My name is Cedric Skysetti, and sitting right next to me is a girl who's laughing at me because I'm like 0 for 10 on these intros. But nevertheless, she's sitting right next to me. It's the beautiful, the wonderful Becky.
Ooh, and the crowd goes wild.
Hey, how did I do?
That was good.
I'm just horrible opening up for the podcast. But if it was a video, I think I could do well.
No, you're good. It's just you, it's like right before we start, you like charge up your energy.
I know, I psych myself out.
And then you release it into the microphone. It's, oh, you know, you get over nervous.
Yeah. It's so weird.
No.
It's incredibly weird. But anyways, nevertheless, we are excited that you are listening and joining us today. And we have a very interesting conversation that I think we're going to have a little bit of history, but our opinion on it as well.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of how you could describe the whole podcast.
Okay. And I'm going to tee it off to you before I make this any worse.
No, it's good. Introducing hand movements to go with it.
But I'm going to get this. I'm going to get this, y'all.
Hey.
Yeah.
Are you a kinetic learner?
Kinetic? Like I need to be doing something to learn?
Yeah, like an action? Or are you an auditory learner? Or what is the eyes?
Visual?
Yes, a visual learner.
I'm totally a visual learner. I think I can learn audio-wise, but more so visual. Less through reading, more through seeing maybe an example of what I'm learning.
Mm.
Or maybe even watching someone talk about it presenting about it. I tend to learn quickly that way.
Yeah.
Which is why I've learned most of my like recent skills through YouTube, literally.
Seriously, you learn everything yeah. through YouTube.
I do.
Yeah.
Whereas you would want to read a book to learn.
Exactly. Even when there's videos, I turn off the sound, I turn on the captions and make the video 2x speed and then I just read it.
Yeah. I don't get it. Like I couldn't do that.
I just feel like it's a waste of my time. Like I could ingest the info twice as fast without watching it happen. If I can just, you know, read it and then I think about it in my brain.
There you go, folks. The difference between a visual and an auditory.
Am I auditorial?
Auditory. Auditory?
What am I?
Audio learner?
A reader learner?
I guess. Oh yeah, you're a reader learner more so.
Yeah, I don't think that's the actual term. But yeah, I like to listen too. If I listen, I learn quickly.
Yeah.
And then I take notes. If I write it, then I get it in my brain. I have to write it down.
Yeah, that's fair.
Actually, this is a really good note for Korean learners. If you're listening to something, write it down. Because when you write it, then it's like doubling in your brain. Like,
unless
that happened to me.
Unless you're a visual learner. Just watch videos on the Korean language.
Watch videos of people speaking Korean.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to learn too. You need everything. Everything.
Absolutely. But may I ask, why did you ask me that question?
What was the question?
If I'm like a… How do I learn?
Oh, because you were using hand motions.
Oh,
you're
my
like
kinetic learner. That was
pointing and, you know, raising your fist to the sky while you were talking.
Yeah. None of which anyone could see.
And, exactly. I think it was just energy releasing. But Cooks, think about it.
Mm-hmm.
100 years ago, was there YouTube?
No, there was not.
Oh, what about 50 years ago?
No, there was not.
That's right. So 50 years ago, people were learning in a very different manner than you are learning today.
That is true.
Yes. You could call that a generational gap in education.
Wow, that was
styles.
A nice little stretch to transition.
Yes. Well, if you haven't got our point yet, which if you did get it, I'd be very surprised. We are talking about generational gaps in Korea. And the outcomes of those generational gaps.
Yeah.
And it can cause very real things that happen in real life, which we will touch on a little bit later. Generational gaps in Korea. And we are narrowing down into Korea. We could, of course, talk about generational gaps in the US or other diaspora exists. But I feel in Korea, it's a bit unique. And it is related to American Western culture, but primarily we're looking inside what's happening inside in Korea.
Right.
So I guess we could give just a really brief background on how Korea has developed rapidly through the years.
Yeah, sure.
Almost exactly like 100 years,
mm-hmm.
right? You wanna take it?
I mean, I guess you could start back, 100 years ago, Korea was still under the Japanese occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And so heavily influenced by, I guess you could say, the rule and reign of Japanese colonization
mm-hmm.
in Korea. So a lot of aspects of culture and how people lived was impacted severely.
Yeah.
And they were under this sort of oppression,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you fast forward to about 1935, 1945,
mm-hmm.
The Japanese occupation ends. And then shortly thereafter, the Korean War begins.
Yes.
Right? So you have the devastation of war where the country is left in shambles and you have a division of North and South Korea. Two different ideologies where you split the country in half. And then so moving forward, which we'll be talking about the southern part of the peninsula, South Korea, we have a country that is left in ruins and is seeking to obviously rebuild after the aftermath of the
mm-hmm.
war with this sort of, I guess you could say more of a newer, like even Western influenced democratic ideology.
Yeah.
Right. And so now you have a country that needs to move forward in leadership, and they eventually elect a leader.
Mm-hmm. First president,
right? And so I don't want to breeze too quickly through this. I don't know how fast
this is great.
Yeah, so you have a country over the next decade or two, really, they just come together as a country, everybody. And again, during this time, if you weren't aware, Korea was one of the poorest countries
mm-hmm.
In the world. And within a matter of just 2 to 3 decades, they were able to rise up and they were no longer the poorest countries. I don't know where they were in terms of, I guess, the quote unquote, the richest countries
mm-hmm.
in the world, but they were definitely not struggling anymore. So we're talking from the 50s to about the 70s, you see a whole different landscape, figuratively and literally,
mm-hmm.
in Korea. Where now cities are being built, the capital of Seoul is rising up, and you're seeing just businesses starting, and you're seeing just these industries rise up out of South Korea, which just a decade or two before was totally devastated
mm-hmm.
by war. And how did this happen? The people came together, one mind, and just all hands on deck, built the country up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you have this generation of people who many of which are still alive today.
Mm-hmm.
They might be in their 80s or 90s. They experienced this Korea, right, where everyone had to pitch in. And within a very short period of time, Korea was able to do well and be self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there was still a lot of influence from America, specifically through the military. But you know, you have the first couple of decades after the war, Korea has really done well for itself.
Surpassing.
Economically.
Surpassing just thriving into becoming a world leader.
Right.
Which, think about, what a small country after such devastation.
Right.
How could this kind of country achieve this status? Mm-hmm. Wow, that was a very succinct summary.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised.
It was good. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, because I tend to try to take a macro look
mm-hmm.
at things. And I think it's helpful to kind of divide it into time periods, mm-hmm. right? 5 or 10 years or maybe decades, right? And so with Korea, it's very easy to sort of take a macro level approach
mm-hmm.
and look at what happened in the 50s to the 60s and 60s to 70s. And then you have like the 80s where there was another turning point, which was the Olympics
mm-hmm.
In 1988, where Seoul hosted the Olympics, and that also projected Korea even more onto
yeah.
the global world platform.
Mm-hmm.
And by this time, you have that first generation and maybe even second generation after the war starting to come up as kids. But they're still heavily influenced by the previous generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their parents who really came together to build the country, to try to establish this sort of focus on education, right? And now the kids, the second generation, are living under that. And I would say, I guess my mom falls into that because my mom was born, 1951? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. She was kind of...
Yeah, she's kind of in that.
Between. Like she wasn't necessarily there like picking up the pieces from the war, but she was born during the war.
Yeah.
Right. And so she kind of experienced, she had a little bit of experience with both the aftermath of the war, but also the rising up economically of Korea.
Yeah. Well, I could just listen to you. This is fine. This is great.
Yeah. I guess these are things that, you know, I just have in my head.
Yeah, you thought a lot about it. Mm-hmm. I think what's very key to point out is the incredible shifts that were happening during this time. Not necessarily like, you know, if you view maybe the U.S., of course, a lot happened in a small period of history in the United States, but kind of like a little climb in some ideologies that kind of pop up here and then grow and gain support and then become mainstream, as opposed to in Korea where it was really just like we were here and now we shift and now we're here. Mm-hmm. Like Korea was a kingdom and then Korea was under military occupy by colonial Japan. Mm-hmm. And then Korea was free, but then was controlled by these military opposing forces during the Korean War, democratic versus communism. And then Korea was split. And then mm-hmm. Korea was like, okay, now we're a democracy. And then Korea was like, no, we're a dictatorship when you have some kind of dictator-like presidencies.
Exactly.
And then you read to, no, we're modern and multicultural and we're globalized. Like how quickly these major shifts of ideologies happened and the people are scrambling to keep up with that.
Right.
Of course, you have people who suffered greatly under these shifts. No doubt, you know, it's very easy to see that through the war. People who suffered from those shifts. People who suffered from the familial splits between communism and democratic mm-hmm. ideals. The people who suffered under the dictatorship, bulldozing whole people and cities and towns in the name of modernization. You had all of this happening. And then now we have multiculturalism and Korea professing themselves to be modern players in the modern world. When you still have, it's like whoever's at the forefront of this momentum in Korea, whether you want to call it the government or whomever, push, 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 push. And then all the other people who are behind, all the generations mm-hmm. that are still living today are kind of like dragged along with that. You have some right. who are accepting it as they go. And you have those, of course, naturally, who are going to push back. You're like, this is not the way Korea life is. This is not Korean culture. This is not how Korea society is. Because it's hard to change everybody's mindset in one go when mm-hmm. you're having these major shifts like that.
Right. And to put things into perspective, all of this happened from, I guess, the start of the Korean War or the ending of it, wherever you want to begin, up until this point within a period of someone's lifetime.
Yes.
70 years.
Yes.
So just imagine 70 years ago, Korea was left with nothing.
Nothing.
Up to right now. That's not a lot of time.
Right.
And I can't remember where I read this or heard this, but I mean, Korea is one of the, if not the fastest growing country mm-hmm. economically in a short period of time to go from where it was to where it is mm-hmm. More than any modern day country.
Yeah.
And it's just true if you just really think about
yeah,
it. And
yeah.
so just if you zoom out and just try to put yourself into Korea in the very beginning, you know, in the aftermath of the war. And let's just say you were the one building the country, right? You were sacrificing. And Korea has moments where the country would come together to quote unquote sacrifice, right? But mm-hmm. Think about that. You've sacrificed everything in your life, not by choice. I mean, there's nothing else left to do. I mean, the country is left to nothing. Mm-hmm. So you have to like give your life to help build up the country, help build up, rebuild your neighborhoods, build the education system. And the product of what you've built and what your hands have built is now starting to flourish and mm-hmm. is producing fruit. But then as time goes on, you know, are you being thanked for it? Are mm-hmm. you benefiting from that?
Right? Are you forgotten?
Right.
Or are you seeing the country produce fruits that you didn't want to set? Like this is not the reason why you sacrifice so much mm-hmm. for those kind of fruits to be born.
Right. It's kind of a catch-22 situation.
Yeah.
Right. Because when we were living in Korea physically, right? I guess that's the only way you could live in Korea.
Yeah, I don't know.
But when
how
we
else.
Were living in Korea, it's easy to see just such a large amount of the older Korean generation population who many of them are still living in some of their, you know, same houses.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have been displaced ever mm-hmm. since, but you see them and they're living in poverty. You know, not necessarily homeless, though that is another issue in and of itself with the elderly homeless population. But you see so many people that haven't, it doesn't seem that they have benefit or reap the fruit of their labor.
Exactly.
Right. And so I think this conversation that we're having now will play a part in some of the points that we're going to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really heartbreaking to me. You know, it's like,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's like what they've worked so hard for in terms of, because they didn't want the future generations to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to leave their children with more educational opportunities and more work opportunities, ended up sort of biting them in the butt.
Mm-hmm. Well, they bore the brunt of the sacrifice mm-hmm. that they just had to carry if they wanted the future generations to live a better life. And so this is why you're going to have this very common complaint about tiger moms, right? Oh, pushing me so hard to get an education. Asian moms only care about your education. But you look into what that's rooted into. Mm-hmm. That was the one opportunity you had. Make sure your kids are educated so that they can live a better life than you. And that was very prevalent in Korea. And so then, you know, this kind of carries out. And then, like you mentioned with the poverty levels in Korea, it's almost primarily going to be the elderly. Right. Of a certain generation too. People who sacrificed so much for the country to help develop it then fell through the cracks because no social net existed for them. And also Korea's traditional conservative mindset of families take care of the elderly mm-hmm. would have been expected, but the new generation
exactly.
has changed beyond that or has maybe not respected that same traditional value. And so the parents and the grandparents are left in the dust. And you can see it, you can physically see it with your eyes. Another fascinating thing that ties with that, you mentioned not necessarily homeless, but still living in their old places for a long period of time. Most people who visit and in Seoul, especially too, don't see this because it's so covered up. But there are a lot of little shanty towns mm-hmm. around yeah. in the city. You'll find places that they'll have like these big metal walls up. You know, and if you look carefully, it will say like construction or do mm-hmm. not enter. But if you're able to look over those walls, a lot of times you're going to see just like these tin roofed old homes.
Right.
With like brick walls and stuff. And they're very cobbled together. A lot of elderly people live there.
Right.
And it's just like these poor little shanty towns that have existed. And the government is either going to destroy them at some point or they're just hiding them.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are these elderly people going to do? Their families, if they're still in contact with their families, are not willing to take care of them.
Or sometimes these elderly people are not telling on purpose their
that
struggle.
That is true too.
Right.
That is because they don't want to be a burden
exactly.
to their kids.
Yeah.
Which is another, like that is just that, you know, that generation's mindset of, mm-hmm. you know, sacrifice and, you know, they're willing to self-sacrifice. And that's even in my mom.
Mm.
My mom doesn't mm-hmm, even mm-hmm. want to be a burden, but you know, luckily she has two kids that, you know, will always take care of her mm-hmm. for sure. But even my mom used to, because my mom now lives with my sister, and she's very well taken care of.
Mm.
But my mom was sort of like fighting against that in the
beginning.
I was like, no, I'll live by myself. I don't want to bother you.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is the two. You can see this drifting of cultural. Values, those who don't want to be a burden, but they sacrifice everything for their children. And then the children who, by conservative traditional standards, should be willing to take care of their family no matter mm-hmm. what, but then are like, okay, I got to struggle. I have my own life. I got to live because Korea's modernized so far. And so there's just like these generational gaps in Korea are very, very apparent.
Right.
As opposed to maybe in other parts of the world. Because Korea developed so rapidly in such a short period of time. So people are existing and living in this small country, this small society, but with very, very different concepts of living.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so this can obviously cause problems in the real life. In some ways, it's fascinating because you can literally see like, oh, the traditional houses, the hanok, you know, these amazing like Namdaemun, Dongdaemun, these old structures that exist from old Korea who survived, you know, the raising of the country.
Right.
next to these wonderful modernized buildings and skyscrapers and high rises. And it's like, what a crazy dichotomy to see that right on top of each other. Mm-hmm. But then you think back on it, like a lot of those traditional structures, we would still have it, but it was all destroyed. And the city, Seoul, was built up so fast in a short period of time. And we're existing in this weird country of old ideals versus the new modern pushing for the future, literally right on top of each other.
Right. And then, you know, the question is, what were some of the main driving factors of that, I guess the driving wedge or the gap of, you know, the newer generation wanting to modernize so much, you know? And I think one of the reasons is the westernization of Korea, right? Because again, things happened so fast, but I wouldn't say Korea really, I mean, yeah, there were definitely elements of westernization post-war in different periods, but I think it really catapulted probably, you know, I want to say probably post-Olympics, right? You know, because then you start to see, like a small example would be you start to see more Western, like fast food places start to come in. You start to see like the McDonald's and the KFCs, and then you start to see like Starbucks, you know, and I believe the late 90s, right? We did a podcast on that. Check that out on Coffee in Korea. But you start to see just these little signs of, oh, Korea's really adapting to different things from the outside, bringing those things in.
Yeah.
You know, not only that, but music was starting to change. Yeah. Like another defining point that I think about is around 1992, let's just say, right? With Seo-taeji, right? And, you know, with him popularizing, I guess, or adapting Western sounds and bringing that into Korea, even though there was still a little bit of Western influence prior to that in music, but like that was like literally the birth of what we know as K-pop. And so that started to come in the music and then, you know, the food. And I just think now you start to see a different way of living for the people that were, you know, maybe our age or people born in the 80s that are starting to experience this new type of like super comfortable, super, you know, efficient type of lifestyle versus, you know, what Korea used to be just a decade or generation before.
Right.
So I think the westernization is something that is probably one of the key driving factors.
I would say it is the key driving factor. Going back to the Korean War and post the Korean War, in a way, Korea has kind of admired and and hoped to mimic the U.S. because the U.S. was like the big fish, right, in the whole world pond. And Korea was so tiny. And the U.S. played a big part in Korea after the war.
Yeah.
Some people can argue if it was positive or negative, depending on how you look at it. But there's no doubt that the U.S. had a big influence on Korea and the shaping of South Korea as we know today, post the war. And I think that Korea has admired aspects of westernization, particularly American living. Even Lee Seung-man, the first president, like he studied in the U.S.
Right.
Right. He was very vocal about his Western democratic ideals, right? And Korea praised him for that. And so we can see from the very beginning when Korea started establishing itself as a nation, it wasn't necessarily as a Korean nation in our Korean ideals, but as a new nation, democratic, westernized world. We're coming for you. We're going to be players too. And associating becoming a world leader as becoming westernized.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And as you know, we see now sitting in 2022, that certainly did happen.
Yes.
It was a long journey to get here with a lot of casualties and still a lot of conflict even within the country and within the mindsets. But now we have Korea that is one of the major players on the world stage. One of the biggest world brands, you know, are based here in Korea. And so yeah, now Korea has accomplished that. But now what are the
internal conflicts happening?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So like, what are the impacts of that?
Yeah.
Now?
Well, we know that you can't just change a whole society or community's ideas about something just because you say that is. That's what it is. And some good examples is, you know, South Korean government will proclaim itself as we are being a multicultural nation and we're investing in our multicultural families. And we want to be able to embrace multicultural ideas. You know, it's kind of a hit word now. Yet at the same time, you're going to have whole neighborhoods fighting against having mosques built nearby. You have whole you know, islands that were saying, we don't want any of these refugees here. We don't want them. Mm-hmm. You're going to have lots of discrimination that is still occurring at a very, you know, everyday regular level in offices or in marriage matches, in multicultural families with their kids in Korean schools. This kind of pushback happens on a very regular basis in a very open way as well in Korea, because you can proclaim yourself as a multicultural nation. You can proclaim yourself as embracing people of all worlds and different places that they come from in different cultures for the benefit of growing Korea. Yet it's hard to change people's mindsets, especially when you're an older generation that's been through a lot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where like the idea of something can be very appealing and you know that this is probably the best thing, mm-hmm. right? But in practice, that's a different story, especially when you've been so used to, for example, in Korea's case, being such a homogenous country.
Mm. Single-mindedness.
Single-minded, like one shared culture throughout the whole peninsula, like just one people with an idea that's been passed down that, you know, we have a Korean blood, mm-hmm. right? That's being passed down. Like, and these people still are living, like people yes. who grew up and inherited this mindset, right? So that is still in the...
And use that mindset for the betterment of the country.
Right, right. So you still have that. And it's, if you think about it, it's just in practice, it is difficult to change. I mean, even with things like, I mean, I can use myself as an example. There are certain things that are just ingrained in how I've always done them. And I know that I, you know, there are better ways to look at things or to do things, but I don't do it because I just always revert back to my comfort and what I've known mm-hmm. and what's ingrained in me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think on a macro scale, this is one of the things that's happening with Korea. Of mm-hmm. course, like you want to have this idea of, you know, loving your neighbor, mm. right? Or treating your neighbor as equals. But you're also conflicted or, you know, maybe on a subconscious level that you've always known that, well, we are one people here. Mm. You know, we should stick together. Because mm-hmm. Korea used to just, you know, mind their own business. It was mm-hmm. the hermit country. And we just stick together. We're one people, you know. But for example, like the older generation, seeing the influx of all these foreigners mm-hmm, now mm-hmm. and people from all over, it could be sort of this weird, what's the word? Kind of a not conflict, but it's just a
tension.
Yeah, like a tension yeah. in their values and how they see things.
Exactly.
So I think it's sort of this growing pains, maybe, if you look at it, like with people just getting used to the idea of multiculturalism. Mm-hmm. But in practice, it's still not there.
Right. It's hard to demand that. It is so mm-hmm. hard to demand to people, okay, you should just accept it.
Yeah.
You should accept people like this. Don't call them 외국인s. Don't call them aliens. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, it's very hard to demand change by just exacting it. By saying, yeah. okay, this is the law. This is the rule now. And we won't go too much into that. But we see that, of course, in how the government handles integrating multicultural families into Korea. It was just a few years ago when the government made a big promise to invest in education and helping, you know, language centers grow and supporting multicultural families so that they can become part of Korean society. So Korean society can benefit from having, you know, this very multi-world player outlook. And mm-hmm. it would be a wonderful benefit to Korea. Great. But then only a few years later, another report came out saying there's been a decline in multicultural families because it's so difficult to live in Korea, pushing back with these more conservative or traditional ideals
right.
versus what the government is proclaiming we're aiming for, being multicultural. So very interesting to see that dichotomy happening. Mm-hmm. And I think if all of this, you know, sounds very vague to you guys, that's understandable. If you haven't actually lived it or been in Korea for some time, it could make sense that you don't quite feel what we're talking about. But one incident that I think we all can understand is the Itaewon Sakon that just happened this Halloween. Depending on where you read your news from, you're going to have those who say, oh, that is a devil's holiday. That's a Western devil holiday. And so the people who are out there celebrating it got what they deserved. Mm-hmm. You'll have people who say that. You'll have those who say like, oh, you know, they're just foolish young children. They are young people who don't recognize the importance of safety and their own livelihood. So, oh, that's what happened to them. Sad, but it happened to them, right? And you're going to have these conflicting ideas about something that is just very apparent. It was not policed well. It was not treated as a major holiday that a lot of people go out to celebrate, and people turned a blind eye.
Right.
We knew Itaewon is going to be packed. Everyone who ever went to Itaewon or knew anything about Halloween in Seoul knows Itaewon is just going to be packed out.
Right. And this has been going on for what, almost two decades, you know, in terms of like the celebration of Halloween, you know, becoming more and more popular over the years to where it culminates to the last, I don't know, maybe decade or so. You have more experience in
right.
Itaewon,
well,
Halloween.
Yeah. Well, I used to go to Itaewon for Halloween all the time.
Right. And when was the first time you went?
Oh, when was that? Maybe like 2015, maybe.
And how was it then? Was it?
Yeah, it was busy. Yeah. Like there was definitely less costumes. There weren't as many costumes, I remember. And then maybe in the last 3 years, it started really ramping up. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a parade of costumes. And this is the only time of year you would ever see this kind of revelry, I think,
right,
in Korea.
Right. But this isn't the surprise that Itaewon was going to have a lot of people. I mean, especially in the last couple of years, like people just know this is one of the main spots for Halloween. This is like where the biggest concentration of expats are, you know, and many of them from America who celebrate Halloween. So like, it's not a surprise. The previous Halloween before COVID was quite packed.
Crazy. Yeah.
Right. So it's not a matter in my mind of like just saying, oh, you know, they shouldn't have been out there. Or this is a Western holiday. It's a matter of negligence in many ways. And, you know, we won't go too deep into it, but, you know, there's still ways that this totally could have been prevented.
It touches onto our topic of generational gap and this misunderstanding of trying to absorb Western culture at a rapid rate. Because Itaewon, if you know, Itaewon is, this is nearby one of the biggest U.S. military bases in Korea, near Yongsan. And so Itaewon had always been a hub of more American culture, partying, you know. Itaewon had a kind of seedy reputation. Even my own mom, like she tells me all the time, like, don't go to Itaewon. You shouldn't go to Itaewon. It's dangerous. And I was like, no, mom, like it's really changed a lot. Like people just go out to hang out. She says, no, you shouldn't go to Itaewon. So that mindset still exists. And it's not like my mom is some really old generation. It's just Itaewon has always been like that. That was the reputation it had. So on one hand, it's almost like the older generation already has a negative idea of Itaewon. It's not safe. You know, it's where all the Americans, GIs just go and carouse. And now on top of that, we had Halloween, which is not a Korean holiday. This is a Western holiday. And so you have like, I guess it's like this negative idea about that. It's like, this isn't Korean. Like, why do we need to put any emphasis on that? And as more details came out from the Itaewon incident, the government, you know, the president, he had a whole bunch of police where he was in a different area because of, you know, it's not riots.
I think the protests.
Some protests, right? So many, like hundreds of police there for the protest. While in Itaewon, it was just like not even 100.
137.
Yeah, 130. Police. Okay, yeah, that's it. Policing Itaewon.
Versus 100,000 people in attendance.
And on top of that, those police were not there to manage the festivities, but looking for drugs. And that is another thing, misunderstanding, I think, that Korean government the Korean government had against what's actually happening. Oh, this is Western holiday. This is Itaewon, which is very seedy, and American GIs, drugs. So it's this misconception of what maybe the Westernization movement was.
Right. And in addition to that, these decisions have to come from somewhere. And where do they usually come from? The people who are in positions of power or authority, and especially in Korea, that tends to be the older generation.
Yes.
Because it's just a hierarchical type of society. And it's like, it's usually the older ones that make the decisions, and you can't argue against it because of the way Korean culture is, you know? So all of that has a part to play. So even if some of the younger, for example, just in, as an example, even if some of the people on the police force, even if they wanted to push back and say, oh, we need to get more people out there, the police captain or whoever is in charge could just say, no.
It's not important.
Right. And you can't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, so I think all of that plays a part. And you could see again where the generational gap really has a negative impact.
Yeah.
And in this case, a very tragic impact.
Yes.
On Korea.
There's a great article on this on the LA Times about, what is it titled? It's How Generational Gap May Have Helped Lead to South Korea's Halloween Tragedy. I do recommend reading this article to get a better understanding of what we're trying to say here. But
they still have some of the photos on there. So,
yes, so
just graphic photos.
Be aware of that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's Itaewon was kind of that hotspot of this mixing of Western culture, Korean culture, the youth all happening here in a place that had a negative connotation to a lot of older Koreans. And, you know, maybe that's why this tragedy happened, is because people either looked distastefully at it or just considered it as not important, or who can say for sure, you know, what they were thinking at that moment. Mm-hmm. But all we know is that something happened. And my argument is that it is due to a cultural and generational gap and misunderstanding.
That's right.
Yeah, but of course, there will be lots of talking about this as time goes by, as we should. We should try to understand what went wrong here and hopefully prevent things like this from happening in the future. But in the end, what we hope comes across with this episode is what we're saying is, one, if you're of an older generation, yeah, it's kind of a high bar, you know, it's a high thing to demand or ask, but try to see where maybe the younger generation is coming from, mm-hmm. what they're living into today and how it's a little bit different than maybe your life was, versus the younger generation asking for some compassion and try to understand your own history. Where did your country come from? Where did your parents come from? So that you can understand them as well. And hopefully, given this mutual understanding and compassion, we'll be able to avoid these kind of clashes in the future.
Yeah. Amen.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add, Cooks?
No, I think we covered a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to really digest and think about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. You know, I just hope that both sides can ultimately develop a little bit more empathy for the other side. Mm. And hopefully things like this will be avoided in the future.
Yeah. Seems like always on every level, whether it's a country level or a personal level, it all comes down to miscommunication. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we hope that you guys will not miscommunicate with us and that you will send us listener mail if you have any questions or anything that you wanted to add. You can write in at thehaffyproject@gmail.com. And like I said in last week's episode, make sure you watch our latest videos. We have another great interview coming out soon that I think you will love. So make sure you're subscribing to our YouTube channel so you know when those are happening. And that's it. Thank for listening.
Thank for listening.
I used up all my English. I have no more. Thanks for listening. We are The Haffy Project.